Hello and welcome to Radio Verulam, where once again we are speaking to one of your local politicians. And I'm welcoming Shadow Home Affairs Minister, Whip and Labour MP Bambos Charalambos to get the answers to your questions. Remember, if you've not been lucky enough to get an answer from Bambos this time, he will be back again next month. We're back into the usual flow here. And it has been a short while since we talked to you, Bambos. I welcome you to the show as always. But first of all, I have to wish you a happy Orthodox Easter. Were you able to celebrate this with your family at all?
Yeah, I mean, I actually got into one of the local churches, so it was socially distanced, but they had a spot for some of the, some of the VIP guests. So I did check. I was like, is she wanting to take up this spot? Because I'm sure somebody else would be, you know, better suited to it. But they were quite happy for me to have that. So so I got to go to the church and then. Do the usual stuff, which involves dyeing eggs and trying to crack the eggs with your family members and stuff. So yeah, that was good stuff, and it involves eating as well, because it's just as you come out of Lent, they tend to like having sort of a big meal afterwards to celebrate that. So yeah, that was good.
Did you have the victorious egg, though? That's the all-important question.
I never do. So, yeah, mine always gets smashed up, but usually by one of my nephews or something like that. So, yeah, so I never have the victorious egg. I live in hope.
That's a shame. Yeah, hopefully there's always next year, isn't there, Bambos? But at the moment, you know, people have been saying next year because of lockdown, because of COVID, and it is lifting a little again. Have you been able to go out with family and relax a little bit more, and also help out local businesses by going out there and just spending money?
Just this week I went out, I ate out in a local restaurant, it was just about all right to eat al fresco, but always happy to support. And some local businesses have been very inventive in what they've done to enable that, and I think with the right weather, I think al fresco could very much catch on. So we just need to have like a southern Mediterranean climate, and Bob's your uncle. So I very much support people going to the local shops. It was good to see the non-essential retail shops open, so it's become a lot more bustling now on the high street than it was before. And I think on Monday, when we were able to eat inside and more things are able to open, I think that would also help get things up and running.
And last time we talked, you did say that you needed a haircut. Have you been able to go out and get a fresh trim?
I had a brutal haircut, so it was very, very short, a bit shorter than I expected it to be. So yeah, the barber probably couldn't hear me through my face covering he put a like number four, and it was a very close shave, very close haircut.
Well, you're looking fresh and presentable here today, Bambos. Obviously people can't see that through the radio, but I can see you over Zoom. Now, we do have to talk about the elections from this month. As I said at the start there, it was the reason why we couldn't talk to you. But the Labour story has not been great. But I do want to start with positive news. And there has been 6 new members of the London Assembly for Labour, all of which are women. Does this make you proud that Labour are helping more women to be represented in politics?
Very much so. And it's building on the success that we had in 2017. I think in 2019 in Parliament, over half of the MPs are women. So we're doing whatever we can to make that happen. But it starts slower down. It starts at the council level. So of the new assembly members that have been elected, I think 5 were councillors once upon a time. So I think starting in local really helps. We've got things like the Joe Cox Women in Leadership Scheme, which helps support women who are interested in politics gives them advice about what to do and about how to get selected and in seats. And also there's the 50-50 parliament. They ask all MPs and politicians if they see, if they're aware of somebody who's promising, then to ask that woman to put herself forward for selection. So hopefully we'll see more women stand the next time round. We've got the council elections next year in Enfield, so hopefully we'll see more women standing for election in the council elections. And also we had three by-elections in Enfield on May the 6th, and all the Labour candidates were women in those by-elections. So we won two out of three, and we've got two women councillors there.
So in this time, it has been a very different campaign trail with very special circumstances and obviously lots of rules dictating. How did you manage to travel and support your fellow Labour politicians? Because you were out there pretty much week in, week out. And what was it like with COVID safety?
Yeah, well, first of all, I did go to Hartlepool, but also went to around Enfield and in Barnet. Obviously, we had to follow the rules on COVID. So we were door knocking. We were wearing face coverings. People were generally very polite and happy to see us. Prior to that, we've been doing some phone canvassing. But we were limited in the number of groups, the size of groups we could go out in. So we could only go out in groups of six. So it was quite strange. But you know, we got used to it, and I think people were generally very receptive. We still did the leafleting that, you know, we do in all elections, and obviously there was an element of social media that was also quite important in some of these elections. So it was a bit of everything. But yeah, I personally love being out on the doorstep and knocking on doors and speaking to people and doing things that way.
Now, you have mentioned Hartlepool there, and obviously we do have to talk about the Labour performance in these elections. They weren't great, they were poor. What do you think are the main reasons for this? Do you think you picked up any messages from that doorstep appearances in Hartlepool?
Yeah, so in Hartlepool, it was a seat where the Brexit Party stood, the fact the leader of the Brexit Party stood in 2019, and they polled, I think, over 8,000 votes. And what seemed to happen was a large number of those votes just transferred to the Conservatives this time round. But that said, I mean, I think the... And there'd been issues with the Labour Council previously, so I think Labour didn't have the best reputation in Hartlepool. Having said that, people were willing to listen to us, but I think we may not have had like the strongest message to bring to people on the doorstep. We had a good candidate, but it was just the I think people will need time to actually get to hear what we have to say. So I think there was a messaging issue, and I think also obviously the Tories were very strong because they were riding high in the opinion polls because of the vaccine program being rolled out, and also the giveaway budget that Rishi Sunak announced in March. So I think those two things really benefited the Tories in this election.
Not all the council seats did go to the Conservatives, though. There was 235 went to them, 326 were lost by Labour, but 88 actually went to the Greens. What do you think appealed from the Greens manifesto that maybe Labour were missing out on?
Well, I mean, the Greens did well in London, but it tended to be at the expense of the Lib Dems, I think, and certainly in other areas. Obviously it wasn't, we didn't do great in Hartlepool and some of the other areas, but we did pick up some seats in other parts of the country. So we won the Metro mayoral race in Peterborough and Cambridge. We won the Metropolitan mayoral race in the west of England. We held all five single authority mayoral races in Bristol, Doncaster, Liverpool, North Tyneside and Salford, I think. And we also gained council seats in, I was, you know, quite staggered that we won council seats in Chipping Norton and in Witney, in David Cameron's old constituency. So I think there's, I think we need to mull over these results. And I think the Greens did well generally, but I think it was, it may have been part of a protest vote for certain people rather than necessarily the message from the Greens. But I think also we mustn't forget that climate change is still a big issue, and it's an issue that all the main political parties need to address. It's interesting times.
So adding to this analysis here, speaking to the BBC, Keir Starmer said that the party has changed, but you haven't made that case to the country, something that you've reflected with what you just said there about a message not getting out. But he also said at the time of the interview that he would not set out a policy agenda in the interview, which is fair enough. You know, it might not have had enough time to re-evaluate the situation. But after a short time to reflect, is there a new policy message that you can deliver to us today, Bambos?
I think policies will take time to develop, because I think you know, there were certain policies in the 2019 manifesto which I thought were very, very good. The problem was there were too many of them for people to digest in an election period. So I think you need to give some policies like a long lead-in time for people to understand them. But also they need to be quite simple and clear. We need to make sure that we need to have an overarching message that people understand and give them a flavour as to, you know, what the party's about. So I think just trying to announce policies on the hoof without them being part of a greater overarching position is going to be quite difficult. So it will take time, but I'm sure those policies will come, and then people will be able to get used to what the Labour Party stands for and how we've changed and what that change is all about.
So how will these new policies be found then? Will it be consultation with Labour members, or is this going to be a top-up kind of affair?
Well, we have these national policy forums, which are made up of members, of MPs, of councillors, of other trade unions, other vested groups in the party. And we, you know, we do scrutinise, we do look at policies, and we try and reach a conclusion on them. They can be debated at Labour Party conference. So there is a process for developing policies. They're not just plucked out of the air. So we do work with different sort of stakeholder groups in the party.
Post this election, there has been some controversy about the cabinet or shadow cabinet reshuffle. Why was this needed, Bambos?
I think after you've had poor election results, I think you need to reflect on a whole number of things. One of those things might well be about looking whether people have been doing as well as we want them to in key positions. But it's always good to refresh. It's always good to just think, well, you know, try something different. So, you know, it's not, I don't think anyone is to blame for the results. I think it's more about sort of it's a wider issue than individuals. But sometimes a refresh is a good thing, and trying to do things differently is good. So I think looking at different people in different positions might be something that works differently.
Some fear that Sir Keir Starmer is taking the party maybe too far to the right with some of this shadow reshuffling. This is from his own admission that the party will be tough on crime, but also the new current shadow chancellor, Rachel Reeves, actually said in 2013, Labour will be tougher than the Tories on benefits. Promises have been made there, and also the opposition to corporation tax rises. Is this a message that you actually counter, though, Bambos?
What Rachel may have said, like in the past, is totally different to where we are now. So I think we need to look at the messaging as a whole rather than what people have said previously. And I do think we need to, you know, I thought Rachel was excellent when she was up against Rishi Sunak earlier this week in the Queen's speech, for instance. So I think we need to wait and see what that position is. And I don't think we should judge people by what they've said in the past. You know, that was two leaders ago. So we need to like make sure that we are looking at where we are now and what our messaging needs to be now and about trying to win the election whenever it might come.
So is the Labour Party still the representation of the left side of politics, or centre and left as well?
But again, I think trying to pin labels as to where we are isn't helpful. I think we have some core Labour values that have always been there, no matter who might have been at the helm. So, you know, we're for fairness, we're for standing up for people who are struggling. We are, you know, for trying to make sure we work collectively for the greater good. You know, we're for giving people, you know, making things affordable for people, giving them an opportunity for work, making sure that they have decent accommodation, decent public services. These are all things that are Labour values that we've campaigned for many a year. And we just need to make sure we refresh those policies for the 21st century.
So let's move the discussions on to the local community here. As always, with these discussions on Radio Verulam, we are here to help the community and called for questions for you, Bambos. So let's see what the people of our area want to know. The first question is actually from Ian, and he said, you supported Sadiq Khan for re-election. How do you think he has improved London, and what projects or legislation will he bring in his second term?
Well, I mean, Sadiq had a very comprehensive manifesto where he talked about a whole series of policies that he was keen. I mean, the first one is about, sort of, for me, would be about making sure people feel safe and are protected. So even with the numbers of police that have been promised by the government, Sadiq's going to build on that. So we actually have more community policing. I think that makes a huge difference. So I think keeping people safe and community policing is going to be one of those issues, but also tackling knife crime and also violence against women and girls. Those are two very big issues that we also need to focus on. So I would be very keen to see Sadiq do more around that. Also, we're coming out of the pandemic lockdown and London has been badly hit through its hospitality sector, through tourism and other areas, and it'll be great to see theatres and cinemas open again. So we need to see what happens in relation to attracting tourism and the hospitality sector to get them up and running. And also, you know, jobs and businesses generally, we need to make sure that people have the skills for work in the future. Yeah, I think also the issue about the environment, there's been issues around sort of clean air and about a sort of pollution in London. One of the good things about the lockdown was that people were walking more and cycling more. And I think there was an improvement in the air quality. So I think making sure that clean air is a priority, we focus on green issues as well. I think that's going to be quite good and writ large. Things like affordable housing in London still very expensive. So looking at more provision of affordable housing would be really, really good as well. So those would be my sort of priorities, things I'd focus on.
And what do you think is the biggest benefit that Sadiq has brought to London since he has been mayor?
I would say it's a tough one because there are a number of things to choose from. But I do think just the just getting London up and running, making sure it's like a global competitor. So getting London out there, getting more investment into London, trying to show that despite Brexit, that London is still a thriving capital, and we want people to invest in London because we would all see the benefits of that. So I think just the his ambassadorial role as being like sort of giving London, you know, good PR, putting London on the international map, I think that's been a really good asset that will benefit us long term.
So let's move on to another community question there. And Brendan has raised the issue of what is actually going on in Israel at the moment. He has asked, as you know, there is a serious trouble in Jerusalem at the present, with hundreds of Palestinians facing the threat of eviction from their homes. The Jewish Labour Movement have released a statement on this attached. He says, will I ask you, Bambos, if he agrees with what the Jewish Labour Movement has said? So just quickly to go through what the Jewish Labour Movement has said. The Jewish Labour Movement is appalled by the brutality shown to Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan. The tensions in Israel have been heightened due to threatened evictions of Palestinian families from Sheikh Jarrah. We are entirely opposed to efforts to expand settlements, demolish homes and evict Palestinians, and continue to work with all who promote peace, human rights, security and dignity for Israelis and Palestinians. He says that obviously the Jewish Labour Movement was opposed to Jeremy Corbyn and is close to the Labour Movement. So what are your thoughts and feelings on that one?
Well, obviously the Jewish Labour Movement is affiliated to the Labour Party, and I agree with what they're saying in their statement. So, you know, I think the first thing is that we need to make sure that the violence stops. And both the violence from Israel, but also the from Palestinians as well. We just need to make sure that the violence stops. And we do have concerted efforts to bring about peace and get to the roots as to what was the cause of the violence and deal with that. So that's what we need to do. Obviously, we're opposed to the eviction of Palestinians in East Jerusalem. We need to, and the issue about settlements, I think the expansion of settlements in the West Bank has to stop. But we must make sure that that the first and foremost, that the violence comes to an end, because it's always the innocent that get killed, and this is what seems to be happening at the moment. And we do need to make sure that Britain uses all its influence to bring about that, and also reaffirm our commitment to a two-state solution in Israel.
And what has been discussed so far from Labour, but also from the Conservative government? Is there any action going to be taken at the moment, or is, because the situation is ever-changing so quickly at the moment, that nothing has been decided as of yet?
Well, I know we had an urgent question on this earlier this week, so I think Leila Moran, the Lib Dem MP, who is actually Palestinian herself, she raised the issue in Parliament, and you'll see from the contributions from the Labour side what our view was on that. We need to make sure that the UK does use all diplomatic efforts to bring about a halt to the violence. I'm pleased that the US getting involved and actually trying to bring about some a diplomatic resolution to this, because the worst thing that can happen is we can see an escalation of the violence, and this leads to an all-out sort of war in the sort of Middle East, which is the last thing that we need or want. But also I think we need to have other players in the region to step up and to help sort of mediate some sort of a solution. So I think Egypt is on good terms with Israel and Palestinians. Egypt might have a role to play in trying to bring around some halt to the killing. So that's we do need the UK government to step up and put pressure on international mediators to help bring around a stop.
Let's hope there is a positive outcome soon to this terrible, heartbreaking situation. Now, we do have to move attention to actually an issue at home, and we have talked about the Jewish Labour Movement there, but many were shocked by the university's minister, Michelle Donnellan, on BBC Radio 4 yesterday when she came across and explained how we must protect and promote free speech. But the interviewer asked, even if that includes Holocaust deniers, the government's new free university speech law would not just protect Holocaust denial, it would also help compensate those who advocate it, as explained in this interview. This would go against the government policy of asking universities to bring in the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, and it actually goes against that definition itself. This is deeply upsetting for many after the recent kind of incidents of other discussions of anti-Semitism at the highest level of politics. Will Labour pressure the government over this terrible situation?
100%. I mean, it's a ridiculous situation to be in where you're compensating Holocaust deniers from being on the university premises to spout out their their ludicrous falsehoods. So yeah, it's something strongly opposed. I know Kate Green, who's the Shadow Education Minister, she's raised that with Gavin Williamson. But I think one of the big concerns is that the office for students will be the ones who will be determine what can and can't be said. And who will compensate who, and I just really question whether they would be the right arbiters for any such sort of interpretations to what falls the right side of freedom of speech. I do think it's a very I think it's a ludicrous policy, because I think it's I think it will cause more problems than it solves, It is almost Orwellian as to who you can and can't invite to make a speech. There are laws in place that would, you know, ban people from premises if they were if they're going to incite hatred. And clearly, if you're a Holocaust denier, then that's going to be spreading these malicious falsehoods, which will lead to tensions escalating. That needs to be stopped.
Anna is bringing attention to a more local issue, and fellow Labour MP Farrell Clark has backed the petition to make dog-on-dog attacks a criminal offence. You and I think in last month's discussions actually talked about how there needs to be more done for protecting animals. This was started by Enfield's Emma Gambrill with a really tragic story about her dog being attacked and killed in one such incident. Do you back this, and what do you think will happen with the fact that this petition has gained so many signatories?
Well, I wasn't aware of how big an issue this was, but clearly there are a lot of people signing the petition. Petitions that are parliamentary petitions, if they reach 10,000 signatures, then they receive a letter from the minister. If they get over 100,000, then they will be debated. There's actually a petitions committee which actually debates, sets aside time for debates. It's usually in Westminster Hall on petitions that receive over 100,000 signatures. So hopefully this will get debated in Parliament and we'll see action on this, because clearly this is a problem. And it sounds to me the problem is with the owners of some of the dogs, because if the dogs are trained to attack and maim and even kill other dogs, then that's clearly an issue that with the owners, and that needs to be followed up. So very much support what Emma has proposed, and I hope we do see action on this.
Susan is moving the discussion on to something that may have affected local people with the post office scandal. This is something that you have talked about this month as well, speaking of your sadness, but also happiness of seeing that justice is being brought about. However, Susan asked, do you know if many Enfield residents were affected? And is there any way that we can publicly make sure that all in the community know that these people involved were not criminals?
Well, I actually have a constituent who went to prison because of this. He wasn't actually a postmaster himself. He was married to the sub-postmaster. But when they were accused of, and he worked in the post office, when they were accused of fraud, they had small children. He actually decided to take the rap for his wife because they had small children, and the thought of his wife going to prison was too much to bear. So he actually pleaded guilty and went to prison, despite the evidence being totally wrong, and this being the fault of the computer system Horizon, which the post office knew about. Which I mean, if you stop and think about it, the idea that you'd have so many employees who'd be stealing from the post office, you know, surely that would beg the question: why are they all doing it? Is there some other explanation for this? But they knew about it and did nothing to stop it, and that's what's unforgivable for me. So people like my constituent, they have slightly different circumstances from the people who won the appeal, because the ones who won the appeal actually had a trial and pleaded not guilty and were convicted, whereas my constituent pleaded guilty, but it was purely to spare his wife from the prospect of going to jail. So they all have slightly different circumstances, but there needs to be a public inquiry, and the people that knew about it, they're the real villains. It's one of the worst miscarriages of justice this country has seen, certainly this century.
And it is really sad, you know, certain cases like that are across the country, and hopefully more justice is brought about to the perpetrators of this incident. Tina wants to turn the attention, though, to the Stop 500 scheme. She says that you've given support to this. This is because the government plans to build 500 new women's prisons, but Women in Prison Group say evidence that says that women are best supported in the community. So instead of tougher prison sentences, Bambos, what is the better alternative?
Okay, well, I start by saying I 100% support women in prison with their efforts into this. I mean, you have to think about why women are committing these offences in the first place. Many of the offences are relatively minor, but women seem to get longer sentences than men for the same offence. And often they are coerced into it by male partners, or they are as a result of abuse and addiction. So I think the first thing is we need to invest in women's centres or support services, because actually imprisoning a woman, and the sentences that women get tend to be, a vast majority of them tend to be less than a year. And in that time, a woman might have had a child taken from her, which will be a huge cost to the local authority, but also once a woman's come out of prison, then they will then have to instigate legal proceedings to try and get reunited with their children. So what needs to happen is there needs to be more investment in support services towards women. Imprisoning women should be a last resort. You also need to look at things like housing, because sometimes if the women have had to flee domestic abuse, they can't then return to the home which they've left. So we need to look at rehousing the women. So the whole thing needs to be looked in the round. And the idea that you'd build more prison places for women is a suggestion that the government aren't interested in trying to find the solutions which lead to the offending in the first place. So yeah, very much supports what Susan has said. I think we need to look at this in an entirely different sort of way and reduce the number of women in our prisons, not look to imprison more women, which is what the government seems to be saying.
Would you say that yours and Labour's approach then is to almost help the root of the problems?
100%. I mean, I think, you know, it costs more to send somebody to Eton than to keep them locked up in a year. I mean, it's just bonkers that, you know, that it's about £38,000-£40,000 to keep a woman locked up. And then on top of that, you've got the actual, the social impact of keeping them imprisoned as well. And I would say it's much rather to spend that money on women's centres and other services to support women in the first place. Then you wouldn't need the prisons, you wouldn't need to keep them running, and you actually get more investment in the community. You have fewer problems if you invest there. But the government are only spending a tiny fraction of money on women's centres, and spending enormous sums on prisons. It just seems wrong-headed to me.
Andrew has highlighted the fact that fellow Labour MP Vicky Foxcroft rightly asked for the Prime Minister's messages to be as accessible as possible for the public. Is this something that you'll work on to Bambos?
100%. I mean, Vicky's question for the Prime Minister, she actually did it using British Sign Language. And it was to make the point that all the press conferences that the Prime Minister has had to do with COVID, they don't have a signer on for any of them. So it's just not accessible to people. So I think we need to, you know, and we're living in the 21st century, and we need to make sure that people do have, you know, do have access to things that they need. And that's both using sign language, but also using other things to make things accessible. So it might be different size fonts for people that have visual impairments. It might be physical accessibility. I've been working on a number of people that have difficulty are unable to wear face coverings, and they've been marginalized during the pandemic because they, the government haven't brought forward an awareness campaign to actually highlight why they can't wear face coverings. So a lot more needs to be done, and I very much support Vicky's campaign. I think she's an excellent MP and is doing a great job in her role.
We have mentioned here local elections, but Michael says that they're not being taken seriously. Turnout for the most local election in London stood at 41.2%, a 4% decrease on 2016. Why do you think this is, Bambos?
I mean, historically, it's always been low. I think people don't realise how much influence local politics has. So I think with councils, people need to be, if there was a greater understanding as to what councils do and don't do, then I think that would be something that could help boost up the numbers. I think people were, in these most recent elections, I think COVID also played a factor, because I think the fact that people still had to practice social distancing, had to wear face coverings, I think people may have been frightened to actually participate in these elections. So, and I know there was an increase in postal votes, but maybe if there was more postal voting, that would actually make a bigger difference than going to a polling station and finding a little stubby pencil to mark a box on a cross on the ballot paper. So maybe we need to look at sort of modernising our electoral system.
Larry raises a very related issue on the fact that how can Labour make sure that voter suppression, these are his words, through IDing people for voting does not occur? Or has it gone too far now that it has been mentioned in the Queen's speech? I mean, we're talking about here accessibility for individuals. Do you think that this will lead to less people turning up? And what will Labour do to try and stop these actions?
Well, this is something we are totally opposed to, and we will challenge this. The proposal to have to carry voter ID to a polling station to prove who you are to vote is just it's trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. Voter fraud is a tiny, tiny fraction of the percentage of people who vote. It's less than 0.001% of votes cast are fraudulent. And I think there's only been like a handful of prosecutions in recent years for electoral fraud. And why should you have to carry, if you don't want to have a passport or a driving license, you know, why should you be have to be compelled to carry photographic ID to vote? I mean, this is, it makes me laugh because the Tories pride themselves on being libertarians, and they're very happy to infringe people's liberties when it suits them. So I fear, you know, and the people who wouldn't necessarily have voter ID think about sort of the cost of buying a car, and needing to have a driving license, and also being able to afford to travel. I mean, some people, you know, may not be in a position to do either of those things. So why would you need a driving license or a passport in those circumstances? So I do think it has been shown to be generally ethnic minorities and younger people, both of whom vote Labour in larger numbers than other groups, who will be affected by this the most. So it is voter suppression. We will oppose it. And it's just a ploy by the government to suppress Labour votes.
595 cases of voter fraud in all of the election of 2019. Would Labour be able to direct the attention onto a more positive way of, like we're discussing here, getting more people out to the ballot box? I mean, would that be a better use of their efforts?
100%, because I think you should be encouraging people to vote, not sort of making it harder for them to vote. So I think that, you know, 595 is less than one per constituency. You know, that's how few cases they're talking about. So it does strike me as being a complete waste. I think Ruth Davidson used a very rude word to describe what she thought the proposals. Ruth Davidson's the former Tory leader of the Conservatives in Scotland. I probably, while I agree with her on this occasion with the way she described this proposal, but it's really, it's a waste of parliamentary time and money, and it's a totally unnecessary policy for something that's not going to work, and it's purely done for political gain and voter suppression, and the Tories should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves for putting this forward.
You could describe it as unparliamentary language from Ruth Davidson there. Danielle has asked the final question before we round up on something positive that I'm sure you'll want to actually talk about at length. But this is a very serious issue from the community here. One of the last questions. The UK government has announced that they will launch a public consultation before details of the ban on conversion therapy are announced. But many people are actually very worried that there are still loopholes being made in this legislation to do with many sorts of reasons. Will Labour work on removing these loopholes?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the fact that the loopholes include if it's said as part of your religious beliefs that you should be able to support conversion therapy is just bonkers, because it tends to be religious institutions that are promoting conversion therapy. So by actually excluding the main area where conversion therapy is being promoted, by giving them a get out clause, just seems to be a ludicrous exemption. So it's very concerned about this, and I'm sure this will be brought up by my colleagues in the months ahead. We're still debating the Queen's speech as we speak, so we'll there'll be various speeches on it over the coming days. I'm sure that will be something that's raised by a number of MPs.
How confident are you that these loopholes will be removed?
Well, on parliamentary votes, we will do whatever we can to vote against it, but the Tories have an inbuilt majority. But I do think if they face pressure from outside groups and from their constituents, I think the Tories might well sort of want to reconsider this. So we'll see how big the anger is about this, and how willing the government are to change track.
The final question for you, Bambos, and as I said there, I'm sure this is something that you've even got a wry smile on your face. We're going to talk about the FA Cup and Champions League final. How will you be watching this, and are you excited to see your Blues of Chelsea?
Very excited. I wasn't expecting Chelsea to be in two finals at the start of the season, or even a third of the way through. To get where they are is an incredible achievement from Thomas Tuchel. On Saturday's game, I'll be watching it at home, with a beer in front of the TV. With the Champions League, I don't know. I mean, that's actually going to be moved to Porto now, to Portugal. So, which is one of the countries that it's okay to travel to. I'm not sure I'll be able to get there to watch it live, but I know some lucky Chelsea fans will. If I am able to watch it inside in a venue with a bit of atmosphere that serves alcohol, then I might well sort of watch it there.
If you were given the opportunity to go to Porto, though, would you take it, Bambos?
Oh, I'd love to go if I could, yeah.
Oh, well, that is good to hear. And you're not playing Arsenal, so I can say I wish you the best of luck in both of those games. And as always, it has been great to chat to you in terms of answering the questions for the community. Just to remind people, you'll be back again next month. But as always, from Radio Verulam, thank you very much for your time, Bambos.
Thank you, Jason.